My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
All right.
Brandon Kajemski.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Well, look, today has already been, exactly our kind of show. It's just like, let's get in here and let's throw stuff around. And what, can I hear that again? Did you call him Kajemski?
Brandon Kajemski.
Say one more time.
Brandon Kajemski.
You did. You called him Kajemski, yep. And unfortunately, I scoffed over the top of it, which is going to ruin the replay.
Oh, darn.
Brandon Kajemski.
You didn't just say Kajemski. You messed up Brandon.
Brandon Kajemski.
Brandon Kajemski.
Oftentimes, my brain moves way faster than my mouth can.
You're like when a computer freezes. Like, whatever the hell just happened, your whole brain just stops.
Brandon Kajemski.
Put me on the list.
So those Waymo cars just sits in an intersection for an hour.
That actually happened on my walk.
You know what I saw the other day?
What?
An aggressive Waymo car.
An aggressive one.
I think it got pissed. And it was driving to win. And it was like making like sharp turns and going too fast. I've never seen that before with a Waymo. Usually they're like, you know, they drive very safely. I've ridden them a bunch. But no, this guy was, I mean, I had Waymo rage.
This machine.
That machine was the AI. Woo. Something in there was pissed off.
Some of them run like hot.
Aggressive Waymo.
The funny thing that I saw yesterday, let me see if I can describe this and have it make sense. So you know when people try to cross the intersection when it's yellow, but then actually you don't have enough room to cross all the way. So then you get stuck in the intersection, and then it turns green going the other way, and everybody hates you.
You block the box.
Because you're blocking the box.
Don't block the box.
Well, two cars come into the yellow and then can't get all the way across. Ugh. And then the walk signal goes. So now the people are like, we're gone. We're walking. Yep. And you can't go. And the people who need to go, who get a green, are furious with you. Well, the first of the two cars was Waymo. So Waymo's like, I ain't going anywhere. There's people. Like, whatever that computer camera's looking at, it's like, we're just sitting here. And he's not going to get emotional, or she, because he or she is a Waymo, and therefore not a person.
Yeah.
But the second car was a person.
Oh no.
And he was so upset, and he was so uncomfortable, and he's looking around, and he's honking, and he's trying to get around, and I'm like, dude, you can't get mad at the Waymo. You're not supposed to be here right now. I found it to be very amusing.
Since we're going Waymo stories, I have a confession to make. When I first got back to San Francisco a few years ago and those things were just popping up, I went road rage on a Waymo and flipped it off, and I got up and there was nobody in it. I flipped off a driverless car. I gave him the finger and I looked and there was nobody in the car, dude. Like the low point of my life. I was pissed because it was sitting there and I couldn't get around it. And I just like road rage and I gave it the bird and there was nobody. There wasn't a passenger. There wasn't a driver. There was. I gave nobody the finger. What a dumbass. A complete dumbass.
It's like flipping off your phone when it won't like complete a call.
Stupid phone.
Stupid thing. Oh gosh.
I did that. I really did
that's
that.
That's tremendous.
I did that.
I'm pretty sure that everybody's just gonna die. This is all like this is right. Yeah. This is a little too much.
Well, the aggressive Waymo guy would have ran over the people in the crosswalk because it'd have been pissed.
That would that would have been me, by the way. I was one of those, but that would have been the lead story, I'm pretty sure, on the news.
Waymo gone wild.
Wayward Waymo.
If they're a sponsor here at 95.7, I approve of. I do like it. I do, honest to God. Sick.
Well, speaking of rage, we got another left turn to at least briefly take.
Wait, what?
I don't know. There's no way for anybody to react to this, so I don't even know how to spend a lot of time on it. Maybe we won't. But there is video that has surfaced within just the last half hour or so from the celebrity golf tournament up in Tahoe. And Jerry Rice is getting into it with a reporter, and it turns into a shouting match, and Jerry threatens him real good. I will bleep you up right in his face.
What was it about?
So you can't hear the whole thing, but the reports suggest that the reporter went up to Jerry and said, "Do you think the Chiefs receiving corps is good enough to win the Super Bowl?" Jerry felt like the reporter had a smirk on his face and was like, poke, poke, prod, kind of trolling him. So Jerry kind of turned to him quickly and said something kind of like, "Yo, what are you doing? What's this about?" And it very quickly escalated. And then you see Jerry lean in. And can you imagine how intimidating this would be? Jerry just leans in on him and goes, "I will bleep you up." And then here come other people and, you know, kind of get in the way of the whole thing. But there's also another quote affixed to Jerry, which some people will like and others will find funny, and then maybe some both. "I am going to defend the San Francisco 49ers." That was part of the conversation as well.
Help me out here. Help out the slow kid on the other side of the mic here. Like, how is that offensive to say that he was asking him about the Chiefs receiver? If he would have said, "Do you think the 49ers receivers..." I don't understand.
I don't know if Jerry didn't take it as a genuine question. Jerry took it as, "Hey, Jerry.
The Chiefs
you
won.
You think the Chiefs receivers are good enough to win the Super Bowl?"
Because they won it and they beat
maybe,
the Niners?
And I'm betting there was probably a comment. Maybe Jerry made one 6 months ago, like, "Chiefs, Chiefs receivers are good, right?"
All
right,
thanks.
And Brandon Ayuk, Deebo Samuel, George Kittle, who are the Chiefs receivers? Right? So I wasn't there, but I think that that's how Jerry took it, almost as if it was a heckle.
A callback to but something was, he quoted.
It was
saying.
Somebody on the other side of the ropes. He's like right by the Travis Matthew tent. I know exactly where this is. This is the extended area beyond that par 3 17th for any of you that have ever been out there to Edgewood before.
Best golf gear, by the way.
Oh, my God. And Jerry, who takes his golf very seriously and takes his outfits very seriously, is out there looking good. And that's the area where most of the fans congregate because that's where all the corporate tents are. There's the fun stuff. You can buy stuff. This isn't far from where the hoop is that everybody throws, you know, that Steph usually, when he was not playing for Team USA, would shoot all that stuff. That's all going on over there. That's kind of party headquarters. It's down by the water near 17. And Jerry did not take it well. Maybe Jerry had just made a bogey.
Maybe Jerry had a couple of cocktails.
Maybe
too.
Jerry. Well, although Jerry takes this seriously, believe me, Jerry takes his golf seriously. I tried to do an interview with Jerry out at this tournament before on the driving range, and he didn't even stop because he was like, I am warming up right now. I am getting ready for my round. And then I started doing a whole thing about how he was going to win the best dressed award for the whole tournament that day. And then he turned around and looked at me, and then he walked over and sat down and did 20 minutes with us. He was great. But my point is like, I don't think Jerry just heads to the Tahoe to party in the middle of his round. Maybe afterwards.
This is viral, dude. I just Googled
it. It's all
it.
Over the place.
I just Googled it. But yeah. I'm trying to see if there's a reference here. Maybe you guys can help me to a quote he said. Because that makes sense that maybe he said, well, the Chiefs don't have the receivers. Because that was the knock. They were dropping footballs left and right.
Oh,
Mahomes couldn't. He was throwing dimes and they were dropping them everywhere.
If you go back, and this actually was a piece of episode one on Netflix for Receiver that we both watched last night. Because Amon-Ra St. Brown was one of the profiled receivers in episode one. They go back to the opening night game, which was Lions and Chiefs.
Yes.
And Amon-Ra scored the first touchdown of the NFL season.
Saw that.
And they've got highlights of Mahomes throwing the ball to Kadarius Toney. Many of you will remember this. Over and over, I mean, drop left, drop right, ball bouncing off shoulder pads, pick six.
Right.
Lions won the football game by 1 point, and the Chiefs receivers were trash. They were terrible. Rashee Rice was a rookie. He hadn't really popped yet. But, yeah, I don't know why that would be offensive, but it was.
I'm searching.
It was.
It's everywhere. It's on TMZ. It's on Daily Mail. It's everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. It's...
So, I mean, that's going to endear him even more to us as Niners fans if he's defending the Niners. So I get it now. I just want to see if there was a quote where he crushes the Chiefs for, I don't think you can win the Super Bowl with those receivers. And he has a right to say whatever he wants about receivers. He's the GOAT.
Yeah. I will F you up. Dude's on his heels so fast. He's backing up. He's got his hand in his pocket. Like, what?
Dude, there's phones everywhere, man.
Phones.
Golly.
Everywhere.
Golly.
Everywhere.
He can't say anything.
I wonder if it was an aggressive phone.
I wonder if they have like my road rage on the Waymo on a video somewhere where I flipped off the driverless car.
Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah. Anyway, so there you have it. There you have it. And I'm also seeing a lot on the internet right now about what we've spent a good portion of the day talking about, and that is whether or not Brandon Pajemski would change the conversation between the Warriors and the Jazz. And that's this comment from Tim McMahon of ESPN on the Low Post podcast.
Educated speculation. I think Pajemski would have to be in the deal. Obviously, you're talking about a ton of picks. I don't know how much the Jazz would press on Kuminga. I do think, like, if Pajemski's not in the deal, there wouldn't be a deal.
Okay. So I do think for a lot of people, this is going to change the conversation because so far it's been assumed that it's going to be a lot of first-round picks and maybe Jonathan Kuminga. And I'll tell you this, FP, you probably don't know this, but like we did a Warriors offseason summit on Monday, and this is just a small sample. I'm not going to act like this is polling the whole world, but about 200 very, very excited Warrior fans were on the scene, and we like to just ask the audience with a show of noise how they feel about something. The idea of including Kuminga in a trade for Lauri Markkanen, like one person who was there was in favor of it.
Yeah, I'm not.
The crowd was fully, fully against it. But that kind of set Guru off, and he got energetic about it, which I also understand because while I think Jonathan Kuminga is wonderful, and my preference would be that he spends his career with the Warriors, I also think there is a built-in bias toward homegrown athletes. You drafted them, you start to get to know them, you see their upbringing, you see them improve, you really want whatever happens next to be on your team. And that's emotion. And emotion is not helpful when it comes to transactions, I would argue.
I think fans become attached to players, yes. And it becomes family.
Yes.
Whether it's homegrown or not. If you sign a free agent and he's there for 3 or 4 years, he becomes our guy. And then when our guy gets traded, you get emotional about it because he's our guy. And nobody likes change. Nobody likes change in radio shows. Nobody likes change to your team. So I understand the sentiment, but when I get so jaded and to all this stuff, because when you live it, you know, guy blows out his knee, man, that sucks, but you go on. Your best friend gets traded, you're kind of bummed for a couple of days, but you go on. And it's part of the business. So as an athlete, we know that's part of it. We don't get offended if our names are thrown around or in trade rumors, because might be a better landing place for you.
Some have. Hell, I could argue it ruined Lamar Odom's career. Late in his career.
I think the Kardashians ruined his career.
No. I would argue that Lamar was actually at his healthiest, both mentally and physically, when he was with Chloe, right? When he was with Chloe.
Yeah.
Like,
ask Lucas, he'll know.
We could really go off on a tangent here, because I was covering that team when at that time.
Oh, do tell.
Lamar really, like, I actually think Lamar Odom genuinely was in love with Khloe Kardashian.
He seemed on the show that he had a really big heart, right, and was a really nice guy.
I think some of these other basketball players thought, well, that sounds like I could probably raise my profile a little bit. Or she's got a nice you-know-what. Like, I think there was plenty of that of these other guys. Lamar, I really think, just wanted to be with Khloe. I don't think he wanted all that other crap that came with it. And when they broke up is when things really went sideways for him. And he's been through a lot in his life.
I know, right?
Lost a baby. He's been through a lot.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
Because he's gone through it.
He almost died when he went out to that brothel outside of Vegas. Like, really, really almost died.
Maybe tried to.
Might have been.
Like, self-inflicted, I'm just going to let it loose, and whatever happens,
or didn't care if it happened.
That's what I meant.
I think. Yeah. Yeah. That's how I read it, too. By the way,
I root for that guy a lot.
One of the greatest, I use it in my classes with my students, one of the greatest feature articles I've ever read. Ramona Shelburne's piece on what happened with Lamar in Nevada after the fact. Absolute, just masterclass. Incredible writing. It's a crazy story.
Well, now I'm going to read it.
Read it. Read it. That one and Wright Thompson on Tiger Woods. Read those two. They're unbelievable.
It's super relatable. I'm big in mental health. Like, that's that's my passion. And it's super relatable when you know, guys, that you're in the spotlight, you have that pressure and that anxiety to perform every night, and you're going out there, bright lights, you're getting paid a lot of money, and if you don't perform, we sit here and we yell on the radio that this guy sucks right now, and he's not driving in runs, and he can't hit a jump shot, and what's going on? When you're living that and you're not performing, like, there was times when the Ofers came home and I wouldn't talk to anybody for 2 or 3 days.
I bet.
You know, and meanwhile, they're probably on the radio station saying Santangelo sucks, he can't hit, whatever, why they signed this guy. You don't think about that. It's all you think about. Like, this is all I've worked for my whole life. This is all I care about besides my family. This is my lifelong dream, and I'm not getting the job done. And that becomes a thing where you take it home, you start to grind, never on the level of Lamar Odom, but I can't imagine, like, what a relationship, and then you go, everybody, we go through divorces while we're playing, we go through breakups while we're playing, we're real people. And then to have the pressure of performing on a nightly basis and then not getting it done, and then you come home and you just isolate yourself and you don't want to talk to anybody. So to see him go through what he went through because of a woman, because of underperforming, whatever the circumstances were, and that you pull yourself together, like, that, those are the guys I root for. And, like, mental health and anxiety is a thing. Like, these guys, we love to talk about, like, this guy sucks and this guy should be traded and he's terrible. They're living it, right? They live it. Like, they live this.
Yep.
And they go home and they don't sleep and they look at the ceiling. They toss and turn every night. And people are like, well, who cares? They make $20 million a year. They should toss and turn every night. But there's human beings in there. And it's not easy. It's easy when things are going great. But, like, succeeding at the highest level is the greatest experience. It's the biggest high. There's no drug to replicate it. But failing at the highest level is the opposite end of that. And it's hard to articulate in words what that feels like.
You just described, and listening to you talk about that, you just described what I think became the last straw for Klay Thompson with the Warriors. Like you just described it. When I there were so many interesting pieces of our conversation with Steve Kerr the other day, but one of the big takeaways was listening to him, and I'll play it for you here in just a second, listening to him talk about not just what the fans talked about, which was like, we see the games, and we're like, well, he's not the player he used to be. Steve took everything that we've talked about with Klay, and he actually wrapped it into a 3.5-year journey that, in the end, he believes Klay never really fully mentally recovered or was able to handle what happened to him after the injuries. Listen to this. See if you process it the same way.
The difference for me as Klay's coach is, you know, from 2014 to 19, pre-injury, Klay was unflappable. You know, he rarely required much maintenance from me as a coach. He was just so happy playing and playing at a high level. And, you know, I would check in with him and he was always fine and loving life. And that changed after the two injuries. You know, he's struggled to try to get himself back to that level. And even though I think he played really well at times for us over the last few years and obviously helped us win a championship in 22, you look at the numbers. You know, even though this wasn't his best year, you know, he still averaged 18 points and shot, I think, 39% from three, something like that. So, you know, he's still a really high-level player. It's just in his own mind, and I think in the minds of everyone watching, you know, he wasn't the same guy and as he was prior to the injuries, and Klay really struggled with that. And I think the stuff that went on organizationally, honestly, that I think that stuff is all sort of just a byproduct of the frustration with the injuries. And we were always, you know, in great stead with Klay in terms of our relationship and, you know, communicating how we felt about him. But he, in the end, really needed this career change, and I think it's going to be good for him.
How's that all grab you?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, there's human beings there. And the reason I think most fans and myself gravitate toward Klay is because he's a human being. Like, he wears his feelings on his sleeve.
Very much so.
In public, in front of, like, in a fishbowl, and tells you exactly what he's thinking, exactly what he's feeling. And to be at the top of the mountain, to be one of the best players in the history of the league, one of the best shooters in the history of the NBA, like, why'd this happen to me? And then we see guys go away that's, successful surgery, and we hear that quote. Like, when has there not been a successful surgery? When they don't wake up? Like, all surgeries are successful. Then comes the rehab. And the rehab is the most intense thing you can possibly imagine, because you're not just rehabbing to, like, walk your dog or to maybe go for a jog again or to be able to go to work again. You're rehabbing to be one of the best players on the planet again and to play at the highest level, at the fastest level, at the highest level, and to get back to where you were. So you do all this work. You wake up at 6 in the morning. You go basically torture yourself to get back. And having 3 knee surgeries and having done that, it's the hardest thing I've ever gone through. Nobody sees that, right? That's behind the scenes. It's in the off season, and all of a sudden they come back. And you're comparing yourself to your old self.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, to this day, I'm still chasing the body that I had when I was 25 playing baseball. But in Klay Thompson, like, I'm just speculating. Obviously, I'm not Klay and I can't speak for him. Can you imagine being one of the best players in the world, going through this, having that injury, coming back? Maybe you're not quite the same, but you're pretty damn close. And then you have another one. And you know you got to go do all of this over again. And the Achilles, you just don't know if you're ever going to be the same guy.
Yeah, I think it's an even worse injury.
That's terrible. Like, people don't come back from that with the same speed and dynamic explosion. You just don't. And so, like, that's a big thing, man. When you're on the top of the mountain, you're a rock star, and now everyone's questioning you, and you're not the same player, but you're still better than most. But you were better than everyone, and now you're just better than most.
You know, it's interesting, though, because I like, while I can hear and feel all of that you just said, it's also fascinating for two reasons. A, he has now had 3 full basketball seasons since being hurt, with varying levels of success during that time. He was still able to average what is considered a very good number in the NBA. He won another championship ring. And I think also people look at great athletes, at least I do, and I don't want to just look at it so black and white that it's like, what's your batting average? Part of being a great athlete is mentally being able to handle what Tom, Dick, and Harry are saying about you, or what your bosses are saying about you, and not let that crater you, which I do think at times Clay suffered from that. And I think that's what Steve's saying. There's a part of that quote at the end of his comment that really has been the thing that grabbed my attention. He talks all about how much Clay struggled with all of that. And then he goes, and then the stuff that took place that gets talked about organizationally, I so was prepared for Steve to go, yeah, that stuff organizationally, that was all just a bunch of media talk. We love Clay, and that all got overblown. That's what I was ready for him to say. It's not what he said. He goes, that stuff that happened, you know, the organizational talk, that was all a byproduct of the injury. So in other words, yeah, that all happened. That all happened. And somewhere in there, I don't think it's unfair for fans to say, dude, we've got all the compassion in the world for your injuries, but you can't take that journey of self-discovery and comeback and have it be a bigger thing than Warrior basketball.
You know, those are all great points. But when criticism really hurts is when you know you're not the same player and you want to be performing at a higher level, and what you're thinking about yourself and the self-doubt you have or what you're actually seeing real time matches the criticism. And you're like, damn it, they're kind of right.
Yep.
And then that's when it hurts, and that's when it gets in your head. And you've probably had this on broadcast.
For sure.
Where you For know sure. you said something and it was like, ugh, it's cringy, or you said something, it was a bad take, and then you see something online criticizing you. Like if you see like random, like you sucks or whatever, who cares? That's part of the business. But when you have a moment in a show or a broadcast for me where I kind of was clunky or something, and then somebody acknowledges that and you're like, they're right, I did suck right there. That's when it really hurts, because you know.
Yeah. So truth hurts.
So yeah. So maybe the reason, if we're just speculating and on live radio, that Clay couldn't get over it, wasn't because he's so sensitive to everything said. He knew that his skills weren't what they once were, and maybe he felt cheated because of the injuries. And then he hears the criticism, and it kind of matches what he's thinking. And then now it's a thing.
Okay, all fair, but isn't it then fair to be like, dude, you want to be a great athlete? You want to be in a fishbowl? You want to make $43 million a year? You got to figure out how to handle that.
Yeah, pull up your big boy
pants. You got to figure out how to handle it, you know? And Clay ended up, I think, largely, he's not like, this isn't about blame. This isn't all on Clay. Situation like this is not, you know, a lot of it is timing, circumstance. I'm sure there were things said to him by the organization that felt very dismissive, whatever. But at a certain point, I do think that Clay then took all of that energy, all of that angst, all that, and he created a back and forth sort of a box where things got a little hot and heavy in there, worked his way right out of town.
Like, yeah. I mean, but I'm sort of empathetic because, yeah, you do have to pull up your big boy pants and you do have to figure it out. But going from the top of the mountain as one of the greatest shooters ever to a sixth man with the same team.
Tough.
Right? Like you were the guy. And now you're coming off the bench. I mean, wrapping your head around that alone, whether the contract negotiations with the owner went south. And I don't know if Steve was talking about organizationally his sixth man role, organizationally the contract talks.
All of it. All of it. Yeah, all of it.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of sympathy for him.
I have a ton of compassion.
Yeah.
But, you know, like that was another question that got thrown out at that summit the other day, which was like, did Clay get done wrong? And a lot of people thought so.
I saw that on our Instagram.
I don't think Clay got done wrong.
Most people raised their hands when you asked that. I would argue
in situations like that, this is not a good
barometer
polling place. Like, we've got the biggest Warrior fans in the world. They're going, no, whatever the question is, they will back the player who they love.
I don't think he got wrong.
Should you trade Kuminga for Markkanen? No!
I don't think Clay got wronged.
You know what I mean? Like, what are we talking about?
What's getting wronged mean? It's a business. He needs a change of scenery. Yeah. I was hoping to be the Lakers. I know that's like blasphemous to say, just because of his dad and the ties down there.
Well, I don't buy for a second that the offer that people say was on the table and was on the table.
JJ Redick's a fan of the station. I thought it would be a great match. I thought it'd be a great match for him down there.
JJ Redick sees our boss and does what Jerry Rice does to golf fans. I will F you up.
I'll be rooting for the Mavericks now, unless they're playing the Warriors.
No, you won't.
Yeah, I root for Clay.
You don't root for the Mavericks. Yeah. You're not rooting for Luka and Kyrie. Get out of here. Luka's got to be one of the hardest, like, just random other market NBA players to root for, don't you think?
Yeah.
So I'm not a Mavericks fan. When Clay hoists a three and it's not against the Warriors, it is free to go in.
Yes.
That's fine by me.
I want him to have a great season.
Yeah, but Kyrie and Luka, I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't need... I'm fine. I don't need any of that. I'm good without that. Anyway, 888-957-9570, the number. Certainly can get into the Pajemski and Kuminga stuff. For those of you just joining us, Tim McMahon, ESPN on the Low Post Pod, said this with regard to the Warriors and Jazz in any Lowry Markkanen talks.
Educated speculation, I think Pajemski would have to be in the deal. Obviously, you're talking about a ton of picks. I don't know how much the Jazz would press on Kuminga. I do think, like, if Pajemski's not in the deal, there wouldn't be a deal.
So, and again, my take would be this. Take A, I don't think the Jazz are trading him. Take B, I would let go of Kuminga or Pajemski in order to acquire Lowry Markkanen. The whole picks thing is sort of a different portion of the conversation. But point three, I think both Pajemski and Kuminga are wonderful young players at age 21. Both have a very good NBA future. You've got to give something up to get something. That's what I would argue. But lastly, I would predict that neither of them are going anywhere. I think the Warriors like them both, and they would be very, very hesitant to give them up unless they thought it was a total home run and Steph was in their right ear going, do it, do it. Those are my takes on this situation.
What number did you leave off at? Four? Five?
What do you mean?
You said lastly, but there was four. Lastly?
I said three.
Lastly?
Yeah.
If you say educated speculation before any, you could say whatever you want after that.
Then
you could say whatever you want after that.
But if I say educated
speculation, I could say whatever.
No, but you have to be educated about it.
No, you could just use those words and say whatever. This is just educated speculation, but I think the Giants are going to trade Tyro Estrada on the trade deadline.
That would not be educated speculation.
I can say whatever I want.
Well, of course you can.
Because I prefaced it with educated speculation.
Well, hosting a radio show, we do educated speculation every day.
Or uneducated speculation.
Or uneducated speculation. Right?
Yes. I don't know. I just threw that out there. I don't know anything. I don't know who they're going to trade, who they're going to get, what they're going to do.
Here's the other paraphrased quote of the day, and it came from Farhan Zaidi. Quote, overall, it's been a real disappointment. We pushed a lot of chips in with this team. We've got our payroll up over $200 million. I think we need the players to show us what the right direction is for us. Talking about approaching the deadline that has 14 more baseball games. Four of them will be at Dodger Stadium. 14 more baseball games, apparently, to decide whether the Giants are buyers or sellers. I mean, the interesting thing, too, about the whole declaring buyer or seller thing is I'm always a believer in be ready for both, especially with this third wild card where very few teams are, quote, totally out of it. I'd love for the Giants to stay open for the idea of going on a run, but don't give up your future to do it if the team is not good enough to sort of call for that. You know, what they've already done is a little bit of a dipping of the toe in the water of selling. Austin Slater, that was a sell deal. He's a free agent. They dealt him, got a prospect back, and opened the door for younger players to be on the field more. That's literally the definition of a sell. It's on a very small level, but is that not what they did?
Yep. I was part of a team, or the broadcast team, that got swept by the Orioles into the trade deadline when the Orioles were terrible. And the team was wavering right around a little bit below 500. And then the trade deadline came, and it was a fire sale. It was Trey Turner, Max Scherzer, Juan Soto.
Sure.
They were all gone like that.
Yep.
And we came on TV, and it was like a funeral. Like, we had to do the open. And the whole World Series team was gone because they went nose down into the trade deadline. Like, I think they're like 7 of 8 and got swept by a really bad team. And it was just, okay, we're selling everybody. I think half of it was like, okay, you want to sell? Watch this. And Mike Rizzo went, you want, okay, yeah, that's the orders from above. You want to sell? Watch me go. And he just like got rid of everybody. I don't think that's going to be the case here.
CJ Abrams, one of the players he got,
yeah,
that year.
Yep.
All-star.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
And the Juan Soto thing, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. So the only difference, well, yeah, that was a high payroll too. That was a high payroll too. And a very attached fan base to a world champion. It didn't go over well.
That was the 2021?
Yeah, I believe it was 2021.
Yeah, because it was Scherzer and Turner that were on the Dodgers that came and beat the Giants in that 5-game series.
Yes.
So it was the 107 win year for the Giants.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we were speculating, did you trade two future Hall of Famers ever been in the same trade, Turner and Scherzer? I don't know if Trey's trending like he was before for that.
Yeah, maybe not. Scherzer will be there.
He's a layup.
Soto should be there. I know that's a different trade. But
Harper. I mean, you could have traded 4 future Hall of Famers.
Dude, those dudes were all on that team? Yeah. Good God.
You talk about fire sale.
I think
Harper was just not re-signed as a free agent. He wasn't traded.
Yeah, correct. Correct.
But I'm just saying, like, these next 2 weeks are going to be interesting. I think if they're playing well, you got to be a buyer. You got to get pieces. You have to stay in this fight.
What do you want to buy?
A shortstop.
Okay.
Number one, a shortstop.
You want Bo Bichette? He's not a free agent at the end of the year.
He's a shortstop, yes. He has resume.
he is a shortstop,
I want Jazz Chisholm Jr. too.
Okay, you
want
both?
I want some speed and athleticism, yeah.
Both? Where's the other one playing?
I'm not a GM. I'm just telling you who I want.
Okay.
And then maybe a starting pitcher.
Jeez, another starting pitcher.
Yeah. You had the stats earlier. You sent them to me in a text message.
They're brutal. The Giants pitching staff is awful. And by the way, I say that with all due respect of the idea that I've been one of the people who has said repeatedly that, you know, the Giants project right now to where in the second half of the year, they could have a very scary starting rotation. Like, let's say they were able to work their way to the third wild card. Do you want to, and everyone's healthy and they're pitching at their best, all of a sudden here comes some big bopper division winner and you've got to play the Giants, and they're throwing Logan Webb, Blake Snell, and Robbie Ray at you.
I know.
In your playoff series. Like, holy hell. Whoa. So I say that, but to this point, the Giants pitching staff has been objectively bad. Like, really bad. 25th in the league in ERA, 26th in WHIP, 28th in batting average against. There's only 30 teams, I'm so sorry to tell you. And they have allowed the third most hits in Major League Baseball. And a point that I want to add on that is they're doing it in the best pitcher's park in America.
Well, I mean, something's...
That is awful.
Keaton Wynn injured, and he was kind of fallen off, and who knows how long he pitched if he was injured. Has Kyle Harrison,
mild disappointment. I get it. Young pitcher, like, I expected some bumps and bruises, but it's more to me functional about, like, I don't see an elite second pitch. and he's leaning too hard on a pitch that's good. But even that, I don't know if it's elite.
You're talking about the fastball. The that's fastball. 93. He thinks he can blow by everybody because he has good spin rate in the strike zone.
Right, and it would blow by people if he had a second pitch.
Yes.
But he doesn't, and so they're hitting it.
Blake Snell has just had a good start last time, but he has been not what they expected.
That's the first game they've won that he pitched in.
Logan had a hiccup, but he's an all-star.
Yeah, Logan's fine. I got no worries about Logan Webb.
Camilo Duvall has had his moments of not being Camilo Duvall this year.
Right. Yeah. And they like whoever the next group of starters is supposed to be, Jordan Hicks came out on fire. He now looks like he's hit a wall, which many will say they predicted because he's never been a starter before.
He is. His stuff is very soft right
Cobb now. Never showed up. I don't know if he's ever going to. To me, he's actually a sell trade candidate.
Jordan Hicks went from electric to he looks tired.
Totally. Robbie Ray is still a total unknown. And some of your other backup options, you mentioned Keaton Wynn, Tristan Beck got hurt. And your backup options fell apart too.
So you got to piece it together until the cavalry comes, but are they piecing it together? Not right now.
All right. Subscribe to Withered and Dibs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you find your favorite podcast. FP's in for Dibs, Withered and Dibs.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Willard and Dibs.
Mark, do you have to be a homer on the radio?
Well, Brian, you have no idea.
Well, hold on a second.
On 95.7 The Game.
Actually, I do, because I'm the only one home. Where'd he go? Where'd he go? FP had to leave.
The handoff thingy.
Yeah, we handed it off to him, and then he ran it right out the building. Gone. But Grandy's here. And so is the director of sports, Lucas Alexander. And so we can have some fun. I don't feel like rebooting my my solo show right now. So you guys can turn your mics on if you want. Lucas, did you say that there's breaking news with regard to the NBA in-season tournament?
Yeah.
Is that the word on the street?
It is breaking news. I'm not sure how pressing it is. But it's
well,
something.
Whatever. It's Friday at 5:47. We don't need pressing right now. Okay. I don't think anybody cares about pressing right now.
You want
now.
Me to tell you about it or you want tease to know? It?
What's pressing is this series between the Giants and the Twins.
Oh.
Tease it? Tease it for what? I'm leaving in 10 minutes and I'm not coming back till Monday at 5:30 in the morning.
You are technically hosting the next show That's on true. The station.
Coming up next, more me. Ah. Boy, that felt good. That felt good. Yeah, that's the handoff thingy. We're handing it off to ourselves. So anyway, one more reminder on that, by the way, that indeed next week our lineup is getting jacked up. So Monday through Friday, 1 week only, the lineup will change. And if you're asking why, the answer is because. Okay?
And that's a great question.
Because I said so. As many parents have said throughout the years. So, Willard and Dibbs, 6 to 10 a.m. Bonte and Chasky, 10 to 2. Steiny and Goo, 2 to 6. And your chance to win an autographed Klay Thompson jersey. No, it's not a Mavs jersey. It's a Warriors jersey. And it is just for 1 week, and it is all brought to you by Jack's Restaurant. So that is all week next week. And I'm not scared about getting up that early in the morning at all. Unfortunately, this is one of the things that's just like the way my body works. I'm usually pretty much up about that time anyway, which is why I can't stay awake when we turn on Netflix to watch Receiver at night or Receivers, whatever. Anyway, Lucas, what'd you want to say about this in-season tournament? Are we winning it this year?
Probably not.
Okay.
The news is that we got the group. So okay. If you can remember the in-season tournament, the NBA is dedicated, each team is dedicated a group, and there are six groups, three per conference. So Group A, Group B, and Group C. The Warriors are in Group C, West Group C. It's the group of death. Here's who they are in.
Okay. All right. FIFA has announced the in-season tournament group of death. Go ahead.
The Warriors, the Grizzlies, the Nuggets, the Pelicans, and the most newsworthy item we learned today, for the fifth team in this Group C, it is the Dallas Mavericks, and Klay Thompson's return to Chase Center will be an in-season tournament.
Okay, that's the first fun thing that's ever actually happened in-season tournament related. Like, that game against the Thunder last year was fun, but I don't want to give the in-season tournament credit for it. It had nothing to do with it at all.
In-season tournament game also featured Klay and Draymond getting ejected a minute in.
Oh, that's right.
Shout out Jaden McDaniels and the T-Wolves.
They should do it again. They should go after each other.
Yeah, that's the one good team in the West that's not in the Warriors group. The T-Wolves are in West Group A, not with the Warriors in Group C.
Well, it's not the only good team
Thunder
in the West.
Too.
It's not in there. I mean, there's other good teams, but the Clippers aren't good. The Lakers aren't good.
Clippers are not good.
They're not?
They're... Lakers, they're fine. The
Suns?
Thunder are
the
good.
The Suns?
Fine.
I mean, these teams, they were all better than the Warriors teams. Last year. The Kings? What about the Adorables?
Sure.
They got DeMar
Above
DeRozan.
Average. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. You said Grizz, Nuggets, Pelicans and Mavericks?
I did say that, yeah.
You know what? This makes me excited. Because those of you who weren't with us during the in-season tournament last year, you may forget, I hate the in-season tournament. I want the Warriors to get knocked out of the in-season tournament.
I did forget that, thank you.
Badly.
Do you remember how the Warriors got knocked out of the in-season tournament last year?
Who could forget it?
It was by the Kings, wasn't
they
it?
They had that big 20-point lead in the first half, and then they blew it
and
all.
And they blew it.
Uh-huh.
They blew it.
And you were probably cheering at home, go Kings, go!
I loved it. That's right. I'm a big Kings fan. I loved it because, first of all, the in-season tournament, who cares? Second of all, if you get all the way to the end, you have to play an extra game or two. And third of all, if you get knocked out, remember there's those games that you get the next week that don't calibrate. They're not like their TBD is your opponent until the in-season tournament's over. And if you get knocked out, you get easy opponent. They got to play Portland because of it. And you know what they did in that game? Do you remember?
They won.
That's right, by like 2 points. But they won.
And they needed all the wins they could get their hands on.
They sure did. They sure did. And it led to that wonderful experience in Sacramento that we were all treated to at the end of the year. So thank God for that. Thank God. All right. You know, the only thing we didn't get to today, and actually, Grandy, I would love your response to this. So the news broke very early in our show that Knicks star Jalen Brunson, who I can only imagine is getting phone calls from every other NBA player today, as they say to him, dude, what are you doing? Because he just made every other star in the NBA look bad. He has accepted an extension with the New York Knicks a year before he's eligible to receive essentially a larger max. So he is accepting a four-year, $156.5 million extension. I'm aware, we are aware, that none of you feel bad for him. However, he is leaving $113 million on the table that he would be eligible to get if he simply waited until next year to get the extension. Now, there is the thought that provided if he stays healthy, he can recoup the money in the max contract that that he will sign next time when this one is up. So he can recoup that down the road. But over the next 3 years, Brunson just left $37 million on the table, which is not something that NBA players usually do.
Yeah, so if you look at the salary cap savings for the Knicks, 25-26, so not this coming season, but the year after, they're saving about $11.5 million on their cap. The next year, over $12 million. The next year, over $13 million. And you consider where the Warriors are at right now, I think saying penny pinching is not the right way to put it, obviously. Spending a ton of money still, and they're still on the tax as of right now.
Yep.
But that just gives you so much more flexibility, and it's a case of there's all the talk about LeBron willing to take a giant pay cut to allow Klay Thompson to come, and he ended up taking a $1 million pay cut so they could stay out of the second apron, the second apron of the luxury tax. But this is Jalen Brunson being happy enough that he's playing with his collegiate best friends that he's like, you know what? In order to keep this going in the right direction, I'll take less so we can all stay happy.
And maybe win.
Credit him. Yeah.
I mean, I think what he's trying to do is he's like, let's strike right now. We're pretty good. Let's see if we can get a little bit better. You got Bridges already. You got that deal done. But he's trying to keep the core together so that they can keep trying to take down the Eastern Conference. I mean, I'm with you. I love this. I just wonder how this resonates, you know, basically to the players' union.
Yeah, I don't know. My thought also went to a conversation that I know Steiny's been having a lot recently about a potential Steph Curry extension and how maybe you get to a point if you're the Warriors where if you say, Steph, if you want to sign another max deal with us, like, we'll give it to you, but it's going to be really difficult to compete in the future when your best player, your most expensive player, is approaching 40 years old and is making $60, $70 million a season. If you want to be here, we want you here, and we'll give you whatever the hell you want, but it's going to be hard to compete if you're making that much money. Well, I don't know if that means anything for Steph's future, but it's interesting that Brunson is willing, in his prime money-making years, to take that kind of discount.
I do think that you're going to see this continue in sports. It started already a little bit. There are certain contracts in all sports that do this, mainly baseball and basketball, and it's not become overly popular yet. I don't think players dig it, but I think you're going to see it increase. And what I'm talking about is the idea that when a player gets to 34, 35, 36 years old, but they want that long-term contract, let's say like Shohei did when he was 29, 30 years old, and we want an 11-year or 10-year contract. Okay, fine. Have those last years go down. Like, there's the normal thought every year. It's like any of us. Every year we want to raise, right? Have that go down at the end of the contract. We were talking about Kuzma yesterday. I think he's got one of those deals. It goes down on the back end of it. There should be a lot more of that. Carlos Correa is in town tonight. I would have liked that deal better if it had gone down toward the end of the 13-year contract that they were going to sign him to. He's playing really well, though, this year. He's probably going to hit one out here in about an hour and a half. That'd be my guess. All right. What are you doing, Grandy? What are you going to do here in three minutes?
Well, a guy that you were talking a lot about earlier today, Brandon Pajemski, was on with the roast. So we're going to hear from Pods in his offseason.
Look forward to hearing that. If you haven't heard it already, really good. Pajemski is phenomenal on the radio and fun to talk to. So really good stuff there. And again, one more time, like the next time we all hang out together, it's going to be at 6 in the morning. So Dibs and I will see you at 6 in the morning on Monday. Here comes Grandy with the best of, and it's brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. For FP, for Grandy, for Lucas, I'm Mark. Shoot your shot. It's all you got.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.